Welcome to Behavioral Health Today, a podcast brought to you by the Triad Network. This podcast is designed to share trending topics occurring within the world and our communities and bring them a behavioral and mental health perspective. Today's topic area is part of our Clinician Series podcast. In our regular podcast, we provide the coverage of a mental health topic of interest, and we find ourselves typically focused on the why behind or the why that drives the work being done in a specific area. The Clinician Series, however, is taking the discussion of topic areas a few steps further, specifically talking with experts not just about the why of their area of expertise, but we'll dive into a more practical, more hands-on, experiential understanding of the what and the how regarding the application of various therapeutic techniques, strategies, and constructs that we'll be presenting. The goal of the Clinician Series is to take our listeners behind the therapy door, to provide a look at and develop an appreciation for what actually occurs in the therapy session, including what gets said, patients' reactions, and the dynamic between the therapist-patient that can occur during the therapy hour. Welcome to Behavioral Health Today. I'm your podcast producer, Peter Fenker. On today's episode, we'll conclude our conversation between our hosts, Dr. Graham Taylor and Mark Graham and Alethea Glaive from CBC's Innovative Pathway Home Program. In our last episode, we discussed the culture of the Pathway Home Program and the many ways they're addressing the needs of their clients, some unique challenges addressing the needs of clients of color, and the way their team is building a greater self-awareness of themselves in order to understand what they're bringing into their interactions with their clients. Today, we'll rejoin our conversation with the topic of rehospitalization and the steps they take for a safe transition.
You know, I know, though, that there are inherent challenges for someone with a serious mental health illness, and there's a possibility of rehospitalization for one reason or another, no matter how hard we work and life happens. And I know that for them, what comes with that is the shame and humiliation and kind of their own personal frustration with themselves. How do you guys help them right size and frame what happened that led to the rehospitalization and then shift them to be focused on next steps? What do you do?
I'll take that one. I think starting that conversation before it's even a possibility is something that has helped us. So we'll talk with clients about the fact that there may be a possibility that they go back into the hospital. So like for me, like especially like in early days, when you're trying to find out what do I need to recognize in you that lets me know you really need more help, right? And so we'll have those conversations about symptoms and things like that. And so it's like, hey, all right, there might be a time, but sometimes you need it. You need a reset. You need a respite. Go back in. Maybe your medications are all out of whack. And we've had clients come to us and say, I feel like now is the time. I think I need to go back in the hospital.
Yeah.
So when it's something that we can plan for, it makes it so much easier.
That's actually part of the therapeutic strategy. I mean, that's part of a therapeutic recommendation. If you need this, we've got enough of a trusting relationship. Let's make it happen. Let's make it safe for you. I love that.
I'd rather you go back in for 7 days than we're pretending like you don't need it, and then you end up going back to the state for 6 months. Like, you know what I mean? So
yes, I do.
You got to do it.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, I was just going to come in that when someone is rehospitalized, we're there. And so I think something that is very supportive for them is that the team will show up and they will be there, that they can work with the inpatient team and say, look, this is what's been going on. This is what's worked. You know, it may be a medication adjustment that is needed. There could be an anniversary or something of significance to that person that triggers them. And so I have found when we have had someone rehospitalized, being able to go in a day or two later to see them has been reassuring for them, because if you've been in a state psychiatric or a psychiatric unit on one of our city hospitals, they're intimidating places.
They're scary places.
And it can be traumatizing. And so to see a familiar face and for someone to come in and you just know that someone's there and who's got your back. And so I do think it's part of the process. And I think Alethea is correct 100%. Preparing someone for that possibility and eventuality is really significant part of our sort of early intervention with someone.
Yeah, really good. Alethea, share with us a story, someone you've worked with that's captured something special for you.
Okay, I will talk about my friend that calls. So this was a woman who, several years ago, she moved here from the Midwest after the death of her mother, her husband, and her dog in the same year.
Oh, Oh my.
Oh yeah. So she was going through severe major depression, and she moving from the Midwest to New York City. I mean, that alone is pretty jarring. She had a niece that was supposed to be helping her out. She was in the hospital for some time. We went to meet her, and she was like, I don't think I need you guys. Thanks. Okay, cool. Then she left the hospital and went home, but still had her number because we gave her a card. She called back. I think I might need you guys. So, you know, we started the relationship that way in her home, trying to work with the niece that she was with. Over time, it became clear that she couldn't stay with the niece. The niece did not want her there, and she was just very concerned about what she was going to do. Not familiar with the city. You would ask her questions, and her first answer all the time was, I don't know. Have you been to Subway down the street? I don't know. That was her go-to answer. And so there were so many things that she had not been exposed to in New York City. So we would try to get her exposed. At one point, I got a call in the middle of the night. She's back in the hospital. Niece put her out. Okay, what do we do now? She doesn't have anywhere to go back to for housing. So the team, we went to work. I mean, you can't stay in the hospital forever. So we got her into, I don't even remember how many respites it was, Mark, but during the time of trying to get her into respite, we're also building her housing application, getting those out. One of the good things with CBC is they have this network. And so we were able to send it to so many places at the same time and then follow up and like be in the housing provider's faces. So by the time she was finished with her respite, we had gotten her several interviews and she had been accepted. So we were able to get her housing. So now she goes from having nowhere to live to her own place. And then we're doing the other work, you know, talking through the things that made her depressed and the things she didn't face with the deaths of her family members, exposing her to different things, helping her with like laundry and cooking for herself again. Horticulture, which was something she used to be into and just lost all feeling for. So we just did all these different things with her at the same time. This was, when I say team effort, this was team effort. Almost every single person on the team met her and helped her through that situation, got her connected with the right providers, and she started making friends. And something that we like at Pathway Home is after a certain time, clients start telling you is they're ready. It's time for discharge. It's like, oh, I want to come see you. I'm busy. Sorry, I got this going on. I'm going to this. And we're like, okay, cool. Right. And I remember we were like, okay, we set a discharge date. She was ready for it. And we had a group dinner with her.
Nice.
It was beautiful. And she hugged all of us. She thanked us for, you know, all of our help. And like I said, to this day, she calls us every holiday.
I love that. Mm-hmm.
Hey,
I love that.
How are you guys doing? I'm doing well.
Really good.
Can I just piggyback just at the very end of that? That is something we see over and over again where people start to say, no, I'm good. I don't need you to come today. Even though we've come from this very intense start and people not going like, I can't do it without you, to a stage where they recognize their own independence. And it's a really beautiful thing.
Isn't that a beautiful thing? That is a healthy thing. So Alethea, early on, you talked about really leaning in to that idea of, you know, almost like clinician know thyself, where there's an understanding of that we all bring things from our upbringing and our developmental, you know, interactions and thoughts, biases, all those things, ways of seeing the world. And what have you, this is getting a little vulnerable and personal, but hey, we get to model what you're talking about, modeling with those you work with and how we want to come in. So let's model these things for other clinicians that are going to be listening in on this show. What have you both had to develop and grow in personally within yourselves to be effective in this work and maybe had to kind of overcome?
I'll go first this time.
Okay.
There's one thing that sort of jumps to mind. When I went into social work, I think I went in with this sort of philosophy, I'm there to fix things for people.
Yeah.
And really that was sort of my motivation. And it took time over my career to recognize that it's all right for someone to fail sometimes, to take a risk and to try something. And for my role to be more there as a safety net, should it go pear-shaped, as my grandmother would say. And I think that was something that took time to get to that stage. And I think that's where Pathway started.
Yeah.
Giving these people coming out of the state hospital the dignity to fail, if you will, was incredibly sort of, I think, important in where people felt empowered. And the other side, I think my role at the beginning of my career was very much about, I'm here to advocate for these folks. And I learned with time, it's more important to empower people and empower people to get to a stage where they can advocate for themselves, because ultimately people shouldn't be reliant on our systems in social services and social care. We should be enabling them to become active participants in their own communities. Yeah. And I think sometimes I felt my social work practice was perhaps not, was doing a disservice to some of the individuals I worked with, because I almost parented them too much. And so that's something I've sort of seen and really brought into our work with Pathway Home.
Yeah, I really like that. I appreciate that. Honestly, I trust just thematically, if I could just mine down a little bit into that, is this idea that I want to come in and I want to be of help. I want to help bring about change. And sometimes in our own lives, we are looking to extend those things that we grew up in and trying to bring about change there. And we kind of bring them into our lives, all well-intended. You know, people say, you know, when I first went in this field, people would say, hey, Graham, you just want to go into psychology because you want to figure yourself out. I'm like, absolutely, that's why I'm going into this field, because I want to figure myself out. I want to put it all together and make some sense of some things. And so those things that we kind of grow up in, we kind of want to extend and, and try and do with the best possible interest, but it may not be all that helpful. In fact, it might hinder growth or hamstring somebody in their growth. And what I'm trusting you have to sit with, Mark, is this idea that I don't have any control here and I'm relatively helpless. And if I can sit in that and just have this holding place, this holding capacity relationally and with the services we provide, chances are, again, we can find a way or make a way to help somebody, but I have to sit with my own sense of, I can't control these things, but I can show up. And that's not easy to do, is it?
You're totally right. And to give you just a very quick example, there was a gentleman that I worked with who'd been homeless for 2 years, and he suffered from depression, had an alcohol issue that he was working on addressing, but he'd lived in the homeless shelter system. Yeah. And I went in there like a knight in shining armor and found him a studio apartment. I worked with him. I got him moved in, got him the furniture, got him like kettle, toaster, stocked up his fridge. And he was delighted, totally happy. He'd moved beyond homelessness. And then I kept going back. And at first he'd open the door, we'd talk. But gradually I noticed that he wouldn't answer his phone. He wouldn't open the door. I could hear voices behind the door. Then I was getting calls from the landlord saying, this isn't working out. There's parties going on. And within 2 months, he was back in the homeless shelter. Mm. And I met with him and I said, but we set everything up. Everyone was going so well. What happened? Right. And he said to me, he goes, Mark, I was lonely. You took me from, and I taught me something. Homelessness is a community in itself. And he goes, I felt I couldn't go to the soup kitchen anymore. I couldn't go and talk to the shelter staff. That's and so here I am isolated in this apartment. And yes, I should be succeeding, but he almost sabotaged it himself. And it was such a lesson for me that just getting the concrete things or goals of housing and food is not enough. You have to really ensure that that person feels that they belong in that community that they've been settled into.
Yeah, that's really good. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor.
Continuing education is both a requirement and a learning opportunity, but finding the right CE provider can be challenging. AATBS, a Triad company, offers continuing education for psychologists, social workers, marriage and family therapists, counselors, and behavior analysts. CE courses are available both individually and as part of our new All Access Pass. All Access Pass provides a library of over 250 unique courses. That's more than 800 hours of CEs, with new courses being added every month. As a special offer, Behavioral Health Today listeners can save 15% on CE purchases. Visit us at aatbs.com/BHT and enter promo code BHT15 during checkout. That's aatbs.com/BHT. Check out our library and check off your CE requirements today.
Alethea, how about you? Where have you noticed and where have you kind of leaned into and pushed around some of your own personal development and growth to be effective in this world? What have you had to get over maybe?
I think for me, I guess being raised Christian, for one, as well as the stigma that we always talk about, particularly within the Black community, of, you know, what it means to be quote unquote crazy or what social work really means. I remember having to learn what social work was about because people are just like, oh, you know, you take away people's children and you hand out welfare checks. And it was like,
exactly.
Oh, is that what social work is? Because, you know, you see it on TV all the time. You're like, oh, okay. So for me, like learning that and moving through that, not putting what I used to think social work was onto other people. It was something that I had to work through. And then when I got into social work school, I was like, oh, this is not at all, you know, what I've been taught or what people have shown me on television. And then just in the realm of like religion, there is also that, you know, you can go to God if you have issues, yeah. right? You don't need to speak to anyone about it. Or like, right. if you do hear voices, oh, maybe the Lord is talking to you. And I, that's something that I had to work through as well. It's like,
really good.
There's a chemical imbalance for some people. And like, some people need to see someone or some people need to take medication. And so for me, that was something that I had to really work through. And like, and when I got into the field, it was like, all right, yeah, I got to take people where they are, meet them where they're at, as opposed yeah. to this is what I used to know or believe.
Yeah, that's really good. What's broken your heart in this work?
That's got to be the ones I say that, you know, we say you can't save everyone. That's mm-hmm. got to be the people that we didn't get a chance to really get in there and try to help, the people that, you know, ended their lives. For me, that's been the biggest heartbreak. Because then that happened with us fairly early on, Mark. Because Mark knows exactly what I'm talking about. There's a specific...
Yeah, we had a case that was referred by a hospital. Alethea was working with this woman, and we had met her at the hospital. We didn't feel it was safe to discharge her. And we didn't feel she was stable enough, just from our admittedly, like two visits to her. And we tried to encourage the hospital to keep her. And she was discharged, and Alethea was going to her apartment building the day of to support her. And when she arrived on the street, it was cordoned off by the police and she had jumped. And that case still for both of us. And I remember just being so angry, and I went back to the hospital and I was like, this yeah. lady died. And so I had an anger towards the hospital system, thinking that there should be a repercussion. Like, yeah. But there was never an investigation. And sometimes I wonder, is it because she wasn't a private patient, she was Medicaid, that she was low income? No one kicked up a fuss other than yeah. us trying to make a fuss. And yeah. no one investigated what went wrong. Why was she discharged? So I think it's cases like that are very, they're hard. And I think as a team, something that we've done with all of our teams, when a death occurs, it's important for a team to grieve. Yes. And it's important for us, and not just to move on and go, oh, well, I've got to go work with this person, no. but to sit and actually grieve the life that was lost, and yeah. and process as therapists how we feel about it. Mm-hmm. Because I think we don't do that enough in yeah. community mental health settings.
I really like that. I was going to ask you guys, you're kind of leaning into it right now, Mark, that I was curious how you guys provide support to each other just as a staff, how you backstop each other. This is some intense work and some very rewarding work, but some very challenging work. How do you guys come together and provide support to one another and really get honest in those times? Yeah, here goes. Alethea is kind of rubbing her hands here. She's the one to jump in. Jump in.
I am a big proponent of self-care. Yes. Everybody at Pathway Home knows those words come out of my mouth all of the time. They're sick of me. And so particularly with my team, I try to make sure that we take time away from the work. So I have things ready to go. We have scheduled days where it's like, we're not doing work. Make sure you've figured out everything that you need to do between Monday to Thursday, and we're going to get together, we'll do a training or whatever, we'll have lunch, we've done That's escape good. Rooms, we've done bowling, we've done everything to kind of build that community together, because Amen. The work, as rewarding as it is, it is tough. And also, like, encourage people to take their time off and go get massages. Like, I force people to take vacation on my team. It's like, good I don't you. Care what you're going to do, but you're not going to be here, because you good need that time you. To reset and recharge. So it's something that I love talking about. I love making sure the team is developing their own plans together yeah. as a team and individually.
Really and good. Just to add, all of our teams have peers on them. And it's mm-hmm. really important to recognize that. I think often in our work, we overlook that this person is a peer and has lived experience. So it's important yeah. to nurture them. But Alethea, mm-hmm. she's doing it modest. They have donut days. They have
Sweet.
Cook days. They have picnics in the park. It's a whole host of stuff. And it is really, really great, because I think it grows a very strong team. And something that she won't tell you is that her turnover of staff is incredibly low. And that's in community mental health, that is rare. And yes, part of that is because of the support through her leadership, but as a team where they come together. And the work is tough. If we put into the rose tinted view of it, that's not our intention, because whilst we've had great outcomes and served a lot of individuals, it requires a lot of emotional toil as well on the worker.
Yes.
And it's important, very important to recognize.
Yeah, really good. I appreciate and I really admire your folks' transparency. Leith, it goes back to what your model is. Let's model it. Let's live it. Let's speak it. And I appreciate and admire that. Over the years in working with Pathway and the folks you've served, how has it changed you personally?
Graham, that's a good one.
Hey.
I would say, honestly, the relationships that I've built at Pathway Home, just from various minds, you know, because we talk about like the multidisciplinary approach a lot. I think that has forced me to look at what I've learned, you know, differently. We have, like Mark talked about, like our pairs. One of the pairs on my team, like we'd have team meetings and she'd be like, everyone's arguing over, what modality to use. And then she's like, okay, everyone, enough. She was like, unfortunately, what you guys learned in school is over. We're not doing that anymore. And so just being able to look at things from a different perspective mm-hmm. has made me a better social mm-hmm. worker. And that comes from the people that I've been around and the relationships that I've developed. And that, like I said, that transcends whether we're talking about race, gender, or sexual orientation. I have made friends, lifelong friends in this business, particularly at Pathway Home, just based on different perspectives. And even right now on the team, we have like a running joke with a few of us, because we'll meet and we'll talk all the time and we'll say, oh, a Christian, a Jew, an agnostic, and an atheist walk into a room. And it's literally just all four of us, and we have constant conversations and we don't care what about. And I think that's what life is supposed to be. There are all these differences among people, but it's not supposed to take away from the humanity of being able to be with others, you know? So that's definitely something that I've grown in at Pathway Home, and it's not something I'd ever trade.
Now I realize I should have gone first, because that's such a good answer.
Man, you got a high bar to hit, Mark. I hope you can hit it. Good luck, bro. That was a good one.
No, I see mine's going to be so management now, but the one thing about Pathway was I'd been working 15 years in New York mental health field, and I had become so disillusioned with the systems and how they were operating. And I felt that people just were on that sort of traditional revolving door and that change wasn't occurring. And I think in the last 7 years, Pathway, it's actually given me a lot of hope. We've gone from the two teams to 16 now. We have teams working specifically with the homeless population.
Wow.
We're working with young adults, people coming from Rikers Island, the prison system in New York.
Yeah.
But it boils down to Alethea's answer. It is the staff that create that culture and buy into this ability to recognize that we're working with people who are people like us. And by creating, like you can tell by her personality and how she talks to her team, if you're one of her clients, you can feel that.
Yes.
And it makes someone feel part of something. And I think that's given me a lot of hope for the future of our mental health system.
Yeah, that's really well put. That's a nice tag team, both of you. That's really the hopeful part of the message right here. You know, I so again, admire you guys. Transparency and willingness to be vulnerable in this. You know, we know from the data that practitioners that work with trauma experience some risk. You know, we call it vicarious trauma or secondary trauma. And just from repeated exposure to very difficult and very emotional and oftentimes traumatic situations, you know, we can walk out and we can be impacted by that. But we also know that we can be transformed by the resilience of those we work with. We can refer to this as vicarious resilience. And it can have a really positive impact on us as we get to bear witness firsthand, like you guys are describing, around another person's, you know, resilience, particularly this population that just keeps trying and trying and trying. And we can draw inspiration from their resilience under some very challenging circumstances that uniquely they have to go through. And again, they got to find a way and make a way through them with your guys' help. Mm-hmm. And what we know is that takeaway it can really strengthen our own mental and emotional fortitude. And it can change us personally, can't it?
Without a doubt. And I think it amazes me day in, day out when I hear from these different teams, some of what the individual they've served have gone on to do.
Yes.
From a good few have gone back to college. They've completed to become accountants. Some are now teaching.
Right.
Some have gone back into the pet industry, working, walking dogs and stuff, living like very functional lives where often when they'd come to this team, they'd been kind of written off. And particularly those from state patients, they're like, oh, well, they'll get so far in the recovery, but they're never going to be able to be fully integrated. But these people have proven it over and over again. And sometimes we have a couple of videos that we've taken of people towards the end of their stay, and I've shown them at Hunter where I teach, and people are like, oh yeah, but that's not my patient, because look how well he is. And I was like, we didn't meet him on day one, right, where he's talked about being in Creedmoor for 12 months. Yeah. That, you know, it's the state psychiatric center. And so these people teach me day in, day out, like that recovery is possible and people can go on and live very functioning lives.
Yeah, so encouraging. Really good. Mm-hmm. Hey guys, before we wind down, give us some resources for folks to track you guys down at, get to know about your program and ways they can follow up.
Sure. So we have obviously cbcare.org is our website. We have published a number of journals, which tells a lot of our different parts of our model, from how we engage folks to how we work with people in the communities, and also document some of the outcomes that we've had. So we'll happily share those.
I'd appreciate that. So Mark, Alethea, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been great to be with you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Good talking to you.
Really great to talk with you both too. And to those listening in, we appreciate you being with us. And we'll look forward to having you join us next time on Behavioral Health Today.
We appreciate all the support from our community. And if you like our show, one of the best ways you can support it is by giving us a 5-star rating and leaving a review. Behavioral Health Today is a podcast part of the Tribe Network, all rights reserved.